keep my eye on this development. VOA 1, The Hits.
You know what? It's...
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today, Gina Bennett brings us Ask a Teacher. We also hear a report from my co-host, Dan Friedel. And we finish up the show with an American story. We hear the first part of A Princess of Mars by Edgar Rice Burroughs. But now, here's Brian Lynn.
International health experts have agreed on a new definition of what it means for a disease to spread through the air. The agreement came after the World Health Organization, WHO, cooperated with hundreds of international health experts to explain or clarify the meaning. The WHO said the technical document it issued was the first step towards finding better methods to better prevent airborne disease spread. The document says the term through the air can be used for infectious diseases in which the main spread involves a pathogen traveling through the air or being suspended in the air. The experts said this is similar to the official description of waterborne diseases. The WHO's new explanation is an effort to avoid public misunderstandings about how some diseases can be passed through the air or are airborne. Such misunderstandings happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. The WHO was criticized by many scientists during the early days of COVID-19 in 2020. They accused the UN Health Agency of failing to warn the public early on that the virus could spread through the air. The scientists said this led to too much public guidance centered on hand washing and similar measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. They said this guidance ignored other measures such as looking at the spread of viruses through ventilation systems. By July 2020, the agency said there was evidence emerging of airborne spread. Soumya Swaminathan was WHO chief scientist during the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Swaminathan began a process to agree on a new definition for airborne disease spread. She later said she thinks the agency should have been more forceful in that message much earlier. Swaminathan's successor, Jeremy Farrer, recently told Reuters news agency the new definition was about more than COVID-19. He added that at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lack of available evidence. He said experts, including the WHO, had acted in good faith. At the same time, he headed the Wellcome Trust charity and advised the British government on COVID-19. Farrer said the new definition would permit discussions to begin about issues such as ventilation in different kinds of buildings, including hospitals and schools. He compared the issue to the realization that bloodborne viruses, like HIV or hepatitis B, could be spread by medics not wearing gloves. When I started out, medical students, nurses, doctors, none of us wore gloves to take blood. Farrer said, "Now it is unthinkable that you wouldn't wear gloves." But that came because everyone agreed on what the issue was. They agreed on the terminology. The change, in practice, came later, he added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Human experts spend years roasting and tasting coffee from many places to learn about the beans. They might then combine a coffee bean from Africa with another one from South America to come up with a new blend. But a coffee roasting company in Helsinki, Finland, is hoping that artificial intelligence, or AI, can help ease the workload. Kaffa Roastery recently launched its AI-conic blend at the Helsinki Coffee Festival. The blend is a mixture of four kinds of beans, including Fazenda Pinhal from Brazil. It is the result of a joint project by Kaffa and Elev, a local AI business. Elev told the Associated Press that its computer models, similar to ChatGPT and Copilot, created a blend that would push the boundaries of conventional flavor combinations. Svante Hampf is the founder of Kaffa Roastery. He and his partners wanted to do an experiment to see what blend the computer would produce. "We basically gave descriptions of all our coffee types and their flavors to AI and instructed it to create a new exciting blend," Hampf said. The AI-conic blend combined beans from Brazil, Colombia, Ethiopia, and Guatemala. It is described as a well-balanced blend of sweetness and ripe fruit. Hampf said he thought the combination was somewhat weird. He was surprised that the AI program chose to make the blend out of four different kinds of beans. Most humans choose only two or three beans. However, after the first blind test of the new blend, Kaffa's coffee experts agreed that the AI-assisted blend was perfect. There was no need to change. Alev's Auntie Marileto said AI-conic is an example of how AI can introduce new perspectives to seasoned professionals. The International Coffee Organization says that the 5.6 million people in Finland drink the most coffee per person in the world. And the roasters at Kaffa said they hope the AI project will help to bring more things to the strong coffee culture in the country. Hampf called it a first step, adding, "I think AI has plenty to offer us in the long run. We are particularly impressed of the coffee taste descriptions it created." I'm Deanne Friedel.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from David in China. Hello, my name is David, and I am from China. Here comes a sentence. My mother had a sweet singing voice when she was younger. My question is that whether we can use young instead younger or not. I am looking forward to receiving your reply. Thank you very much, David. Thank you for writing, David. This is a good question. The short answer is yes. You can use young instead of younger. But using young instead of younger does change the meaning of the sentence just a bit. Let's look at the differences between the two choices. Young and younger are both adjectives. Adjectives are words that describe nouns. Younger is a comparative adjective. Comparative adjectives are used to compare two people or things. Comparative adjectives are easy to recognize because they often have an ER ending. They are also often, but not always, followed by the conjunction than. Let's look again at David's original example sentence. My mother had a sweet singing voice when she was younger. In this situation, younger is describing mother. But it is not so clear what is being compared. That is because we sometimes leave out information from a sentence. Even without the extra information, however, the listener or reader is still likely to understand the full thought or meaning. As readers, we understand the full meaning of David's sentence to be, "My mother had a sweet singing voice when she was younger than she is now." We do not know how old the mother is now, but we know she had a sweet singing voice when she was younger than her current age. Let's say, for example, that the writer's mother is 60 years old. The writer of the sentence could mean that his mother had a sweet singing voice when she was 40 years old, for example. Or the writer could mean that his mother had a sweet singing voice when she was 15 years old. Both 15 years old and 40 years old are younger than 60. Now let's consider how the sentence's meaning might change if we were to use young instead of younger. The sentence would be, "My mother had a sweet singing voice when she was young." The meaning has changed just a bit. Now it is clear that the writer means his mother had a sweet singing voice when she was a young person, or in her youth. We hope this explanation has helped you, David. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett.
You just heard Ask a Teacher. Now, teacher Gina Bennett joins me for a chat. Gina, you are younger than I. I'm not providing any specific ages. That's personal info.
Yes, you are older than I am.
but I am younger than learning English. It was launched in 1959. My launch came later.
So, learning English is older than the both of us. But I am the newest member of this VOA team.
And neither one of us is a senior yet.
Senior citizen, that's right. A person who is 65 or older.
We have been seniors in the past, though.
That's true. High school and college students are called seniors in their final academic year before graduation or completion of studies.
I was a college senior for several years, but that is another story for another time. Thanks for coming in, Gina. It is always fun to talk with you.
You too, Katie.
Today, we begin a new series from a book by American writer Edgar Rice Burroughs. The book is called A Princess of Mars. It is the first book in a series that Mr. Burroughs wrote about a man who travels to Mars during the last years of the 1800s. There, the man meets strange beings and sees strange sights. At first, he is a captive, then a warrior, and after many battles, a prince of a royal family. Shep O'Neill begins the story of A Princess of Mars.
I am a very old man. How old, I do not know. It is possible I am 100, maybe more. I cannot tell, because I have never aged as other men do. So far as I can remember, I have always been a man of about 30. I appear today as I did 40 years ago. Yet, I feel that I cannot go on living forever. Someday, I will die the real death from which there is no escape. I do not know why I should fear death, I, who have died 2 times, and am still alive. I have never told this story. I know the human mind will not believe what it cannot understand. I cannot explain what happened to me. I can only tell of the 10 years my dead body lay undiscovered in an Arizona cave. My name is John Carter. I am from the state of Virginia. At the close of the Civil War, I found myself without a home, without money, and without work. I decided the best plan was to search for gold in the great deserts of the American Southwest. I spent almost a year searching for gold with another former soldier, Captain James Powell, also of Virginia. We were extremely lucky. In the winter of 1865, we found rocks that held gold. Powell was trained as a mining engineer. He said we had uncovered over $1 million worth of gold in only 3 months. But the work was slow, with only 2 men and not much equipment. So we decided Powell should go to the nearest settlement to seek equipment and men to help us with the work. On March 3rd, 1866, Powell said goodbye. He rode his horse down the mountain toward the valley. I followed his progress for several hours. The morning Powell left was like all mornings in the deserts of the great Southwest, clear and beautiful. Not much later, I looked across the valley. I was surprised to see three riders in the same place where I had last seen my friend. After watching for some time, I decided the three riders must be hostile Indians. Powell, I knew, was well-armed and an experienced soldier, but I knew he would need my aid. I found my weapons, placed a saddle on my horse, and started as fast as possible down the trail taken by Powell. I followed as quickly as I could until dark. About 9 o'clock, the moon became very bright. I had no difficulty following Powell's trail. I soon found the trail left by the three riders following Powell. I knew they were Indians. I was sure they wanted to capture Powell. Suddenly, I heard shots far ahead of me. I hurried ahead as fast as I could. Soon, I came to a small camp. Several hundred Apache Indians were in the center of the camp. I could see Powell on the ground. I did not even think about what to do. I just acted. I pulled out my guns and began shooting. The Apaches were surprised and fled. I forced my horse into the camp and toward Powell. I reached down and pulled him up on the horse by his belt. I urged the horse to greater speed. The Apaches, by now, realized that I was alone and quickly began to follow. We were soon in very rough country. The trail I chose began to rise sharply. It went up and up. I followed the trail for several hundred meters more until I came to the mouth of a large cave. It was almost morning now. I got off my horse and laid Powell on the ground. I tried to give him water, but it was no use. Powell was dead. I laid his body down and continued to the cave. I began to explore the cave. I was looking for a safe place to defend myself, or perhaps for a way out, but I became very sleepy. It was a pleasant feeling. My body became extremely heavy. I had trouble moving. Soon, I had to lay down against the side of the cave. For some reason, I could not move my arms or legs. I lay facing the opening of the cave. I could see part of the trail that had led me here. And now, I could see the Apaches. They had found me, but I could do nothing. Within a minute, one of them came into the cave. He looked at me, but he came no closer. His eyes grew wide. His mouth opened. He had a look of terror on his face. He looked behind me for a moment and then fled. Suddenly, I heard a low noise behind me. So could the rest of the Apaches. They all turned and fled. The sound became louder, but still I could not move. I could not turn my head to see what was behind me. All day, I lay like this. I tried again to rise, and again, but I still could not move. Then I heard a sharp sound. It was like a steel wire breaking. I quickly stood up. My back was against the cave wall. I looked down. There before me lay my body. For a few moments, I stood looking at my body. I could not bring myself to touch it. I was very frightened. The sounds of the cave and the sight of my body forced me away. I slowly backed to the opening of the cave. I turned to look at the Arizona night. I could see 1,000 stars. As I stood there, I turned my eyes to a large red star. I could not stop looking at it. It was Mars, the red planet, the red god of war. It seemed to pull me near. Then, for a moment, I closed my eyes. There was an instant of extreme cold and total darkness. Suddenly, I was in deep, dreamless, peaceful sleep. I opened my eyes upon a very strange land. I immediately knew then I was on Mars. Not once did I question this fact. My mind told me I was on Mars, as your mind tells you that you are upon Earth. You do not question the fact. Nor did I. I found myself lying on a bed of yellow-colored grass that covered the land for kilometers. The time was near the middle of the day, and the sun was shining full upon me. It was warm. I decided to do a little exploring. Springing to my feet, I received my first Martian surprise. The effort to stand carried me into the Martian air to the height of about 1 meter. I landed softly upon the ground, however, without incident. I found that I must learn to walk all over again. My muscles were used to the gravity of Earth. Mars has less gravity. My attempts to walk resulted in jumps and hops, which took me into the air. I once landed on my face. I soon learned that it took much less effort for me to move on Mars than it did on Earth. Near me was a small, low wall. Carefully, I made my way to the wall and looked over. It was filled with eggs, some already broken open. Small, green creatures were in them. They looked at me with huge red eyes. As I watched the fierce-looking creatures, I failed to hear 20 full-grown Martians coming from behind me. They had come without warning. As I turned, I saw them. One was coming at me with a huge spear, with its sharp tip pointed at my heart.
You have been listening to A Princess of Mars. The voice of John Carter was Shep O'Neill. Join us again next week for the next part of the Edgar Rice Burroughs story, A Princess of Mars.
All the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.